Show, episode number 522. My name is John Morgan, and Cole Coffee is with me as we're creeping. We're a couple days away, baby. What do I say every year in Las Vegas? April and October are my two favorite months of the year here in Las Vegas. We're just a couple days away from, hopefully, I'll knock on wood a little bit, 75 degrees every day, nice and chill and cool. It's that time of the year.
I love it because we've been spiking up a little bit above it. I got the windows open early in the day. It's nice. I'll let the breeze just kind of run through the house.
Yeah.
But even right now, I'm like trying to see if I can still do it. The heat hasn't crept in, but it's starting to get to that point because now it's to the point where we're just about the point where you can't get away with not putting your AC on.
Oh, I know.
And I'm trying. So hard to not turn it on.
April's creeping up right now, but then that's when the electric bills start creeping up in the summertime, man.
They're right there, man. It's funny because when you started saying like the day's coming up, I thought you were mentioning April 5th, which would be the calendar 10 years.
That is coming up, you know, very close.
It's coming
close
up very,
as
very
well.
Close as well, you know. So I know we told everybody, everybody celebrated the 520 episodes. So yep. 10 episodes of actual, 10 years of episodes.
Years.
But we are actually nearing the calendar 10 years, which is still it's just bonkers. It's crazy.
It is wild.
But yeah. What a lot of fun over the years.
We've had some good times.
We're getting there.
We're just getting old is what we're doing.
Oh, my God. So much.
Oh, man. Well, listen, hopefully everybody got a good weekend this past week. Got to catch a little bit of the NCAA Wrestling Championships, man. I just want to give a quick final shout-out to that because I've been seeing a lot of love for it, man. I've been seeing a lot of coverage in a lot of places. I saw David Taylor and Wyatt Henderson were making the rounds on, like, the Pat McAfee show, and there's been some
other.
That's huge. I mean, that's big.
That's big
for the sport of college wrestling.
That's real big.
It was a really, really good one. I talked about it a little bit on the and a half episode as well, obviously, because it really was a good scene. But hopefully everybody got to see a little bit. If you want a recap of it and you don't happen to support us over at the patreon.com/MMAroadshow, which we understand, that's okay. I did speak to Henry Cejudo as well for Grind City Media, and he talk about a fan. I was like, Henry. So we talked about Wyatt Hendrickson. You know, we talked because he was there. Obviously, he was there in person if you didn't see on social media. But I was like, you know, we talked about that big story. Give me what else. Like, what else was, like, one of your favorite stories outside of the big one, Wyatt Hendrickson? And he literally went down weight class by weight class.
Wow.
Going through every winter. I mean, just sitting in his car talking to me. It wasn't like he had a screen in front of him or anything like that. He literally went down all 10 weight classes and, you know, talked about the storyline behind them and kind of what he thought about each one. I was like, damn, I was just asking for, like, off the top of your head,
just
like
a general,
one other,
a little
nailed it. So he's pretty, it's clearly very, very passionate about it as well. I saw a lot of people saying, and I think it's true, and I don't want it to sound like an insult, and we touched on it a little bit, but like that you can tell Daniel Cormier actually has more passion for wrestling than he does for MMA. Like it just bleeds through. You know what I mean? That's not a bad thing. You know what I mean? It's not that he's not passionate about MMA, but you know, he still coaches kids.
I was gonna
say
he's a wrestling coach.
Yeah.
He came up in it. I mean, like I think he's been a spokesperson for wrestling for so much longer than MMA. MMA kind of became his thing, you know, and then we've kind of put him into the commentary role, and that I think it was just a way to stay active, make some extra cheese, and he's having a good time with it. But we're watching him grow in that as well. But I mean, I think when you get him around wrestling, he could talk high level wrestling since back probably when he was in college,
100%.
You know. So now they just happen to put a mic in front of him, but having all those reps from the MMA just makes it that much smoother, you know, taking all that wealth of knowledge, you know, along wrestling, and then to be a coach. So you got to think about how good he can talk about a sport. If you can really train kids and impart knowledge to those kids, you could speak that sport to anybody, and they're going to get
it. And anybody will tell you that, like even like fighters that transition to coach, and they're like, it just improved my knowledge of the game even better, because now it's not that I just have to know it and practice it. I have to be able to explain it to somebody, and I have to be able to craft their technique, you know what I mean? So you have to know it even better.
In multiple different ways. You have to, you know it three different ways,
all
the different setups and everything. But, yeah, you could tell, especially when it came to that, you know, when Gable lost to Hendrickson or whatever, that his excitement, just
crazy.
Hearing his voice, like it was pretty.
You could just hear it.
It was pretty cool.
I loved it.
It was pretty cool.
It was cool.
You could tell the moment where knowing that we've seen those moments when he's seen knockouts, I could tell when his jaw dropped open and there was that moment to take in the scene before you heard him again. I was like, I guarantee everybody was. That was still so cool when you go back and watch like that replay. Look at the fans and look at the coaches and look at everybody where they're calling for the fall, you know, they're doing all this stuff, like just seeing them like make it official, you know, just losing their damn mind. But that was nice.
It was iconic, man. It really was a cool way to wrap it up. So it's been cool to see all the coverage. Like I said, I've become a real fan of it through working with Match Day. So it's been fun. And one other thing Henry Cejudo said, and I'm going to give it some love because I agree with him. He's like, Dana, Hunter, you guys got to get into wrestling. You got to support wrestling. And we got to do some wrestling at the Apex. And he said, like, look, I'm a grappling fan, right? Like, I love grappling, right? But he's like, I like jiu-jitsu. He's like, but sometimes it's like watching paint dry. Like, sometimes it's a little boring. He's like, wrestling is all action. Yeah. Now, I don't want to insult BJJ or submission grappling because there are some – I mean, look, there's slow wrestling matches too. There's not as many –
I was going to say, plenty of slow wrestling matches.
I would say there's not as many slow wrestling matches as there are slow – submission grappling matches, you know, maybe just because the way like the referees are constantly restarting, but there are like there's 1-0, you know, results in wrestling that don't have a lot of points, so it's not like it's all. But to his point,
it helps with the stalling calls, and it helps when you're not being aggression. There's calls built in to keep the action moving forward, but so you usually don't get a lot of like guys just sort of holding on there where they're fighting for a position, whereas, you know, wrestling they'll break them, they'll stop it or whatever, or they'll punish you to be more aggressive,
right.
But people have said that forever. They should do the same sort of thing in jiu-jitsu, you know, and change the way that jiu-jitsu goes. But primarily when you look at it, a lot of those, it's that fine details in jiu-jitsu where, say, if you're working into a particular choke or some submission, it's those little differences of that second, that extra couple of seconds to where eventually the person you're working on starts to give, you know, and then it seals the deal, you know, whereas you have to give it time to set up and you have to work through the submission. Whereas wrestling, they're just like, it's when it's moving, especially when guys are shuffling position and they're trying to chase a takedown and doing stuff. It's awesome. It's so fast and it's so quick, but yes, you've still seen ones where guys are so evenly matched where you don't see a lot of points. Someone could easily say, well, this is boring, where a wrestling guy might be like, you just don't understand.
You don't know the fine details
so
of it.
You know, and it's like, bro, it's the same thing for jiu-jitsu. You know, you got other guys that are going to go off the side and say, bro, you don't understand the fine details of what's happening right now, whereas you're just like, where's the action? Make it happen, blah, blah, blah. You know, the same sort of thing. But typically, wrestling – especially, you know, when you get the high level, the guys that are competing for championships are so fantastic. So good that there's always something that keeps your, attention, you know?
Yep. I'd love to see it at the Apex, man. I hope we can do some.
It's a perfect venue for it.
Perfect venue. Especially, like, once they get all the remodeling done and want to see it. And you can't tell me, like, the universities themselves wouldn't like to come and, like, work out at the PI, work out at the – you know what I mean? Get that tour, be treated like that. I'm sure the alumni, we know that with professional sports. Who doesn't want to come see their team play in Las Vegas, right? Like, everybody comes to see the road teams against the Raiders or against the Golden Knights. So,
and I guarantee they could set it up to where – I mean, multiple mats, at least points. Maybe they just change the room.
Yep.
You know, maybe start it out with four, if they could fit four in there. Four might be a little too much. But, I mean, at least two or something.
It just works out two.
But then maybe when it works to the championship, like even when you see that happen at other things, they reconfigure the floor. You know, like that would be so cool.
They go from 8 to 6 to 1.
Because even they got that back warehouse room where I wonder, or even if they just set up an outdoor tent and just send up like multiple floors, you know, multiple mats, let them work through it. And then when it gets to the final, you know, the semis or whatever, take them to the two mats in the arena. And then when it's all said and done, you got your finalists, reconfigure the floor, and boom, have that center mat.
Yep.
You know, it would be so dope.
And with their production and everything,
it'd be incredible.
It'd be amazing. Incredible. So, knock on wood, hopefully we can see some progress next year. Match Day has grown tremendously on
Fight Pass.
Just got
to find some money for it. Because, you know, Dane and them, if you say, because, I mean, for them, they want the Apex to be a production venue that somebody's going to rent out.
Yep.
So, if there is money. You know, because if it's already Fight Pass paying for it, they're like, well, we're already putting money into it. We're not going to put money in and then pay ourselves from Fight Pass. Could be like taking money away. But some of these big college universities, if they want to get behind it and put some money and put an event together and rent and use the UFC Apex as the production venue for it, and maybe Fight Pass will go in on it and they'll share some of the cost. I don't see why they wouldn't, you know because that's what the venue's there for.
Tell you what it would be interesting is to see where they end up on the new TV deal as well, because ESPN does do a lot of college wrestling now, you know what I mean? So, like, maybe there's something to be shared there, like, hey, we got this together. Why, if they stay with ESPN, like, hey, you do a lot of wrestling, why don't we take some of what we're doing and do it here? You know what I mean? There's something
I think
there.
They would be into to it. I think just Dana and them, they're like, we can only give away free stuff so much, you know.
Right.
Even like with the Fight Pass invitationals and all the other stuff, that's content they're putting together. But I'm sure that there's money that's coming in to make it worth their while to do that sort of thing. If they get the money, I'm sure they'd be more than happy to do it. I mean, they would love to see that place busy nightly.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And how cool would that? Because then the people said, oh, well, you know, we're tired of Apex shows. Well, if the Apex is so booked out doing other events, the fights have to go on the road.
There you go.
You know, and then when they go on the road, I'm sure nobody gripes about
them. Nobody complains. That's a great thing we've seen about the UFC is when they go on the road, nobody says a bad thing about the fights.
I swear, everybody was so happy about UFC London, and I'm just – can't wait to hear how they are about UFC
Listen,
Mexico.
Listen, man, UFC London, I'm sorry. I feel like it wasn't that bad.
I know.
Like, everybody's griping. I didn't think it was
so bad.
It wasn't the greatest night of fights I've ever seen, yeah. But, like, I didn't get done with that and be like, I just wasted 6 hours of my life.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was.
It felt long.
It was long. There was a lot of decisions and a lot of fights.
You know, but I mean, but the fights were fun.
The fights were good.
You know, like, that's funny because I was watching them while I was hanging out with family, but, I mean, I certainly didn't feel like I was, like, I wasn't like, oh, I can turn these fights off because, you know, granted, I should have turned the fights off, spent more time with the family, but still, I was like, I'm not like,
I'm here.
Why am I watching this? This is so boring. No, I mean, like, it was fine, but I kept hearing the voice in the back of my head, like, just be grateful it's on the road. Nobody's going to be griping about it.
All you have to do is just take it out of the Apex.
Just take
it's
out of the Apex.
It's magically better.
Well, if they book the Apex with all this other stuff,
they'll have to take it out.
So everybody should ask Dana to get wrestling and get all these other things, and then the show will be on the road.
Let's go. Let's get it. Hey, I do one last thing I want to say about wrestling real quick, and then we'll go on to MMA. A lot to talk about, but it was funny because during the wrestling coverage, there was like a PSA that they played a lot about, like, not harassing college athletes after betting losses.
I was
like, how sad is it? Like, I mean, and I agree wholeheartedly, you know what I mean? Like, you should never be reaching out to athletes talking about how, hey, your loss cost me money. You know what I mean? Like, they're already dejected and mad enough, and they got nothing to do with your bets. But I just thought, what a sad statement that they felt like it obligated, like, hey, this is a message that we need to get out there to people, and that they should not be harassing college athletes, especially after losses.
Well, I mean, it's one thing. I guarantee everybody sort of did it before when they weren't being paid, but then they're like, all right, I'm just going to drop because these kids are just trying to go through school, whatever. Now that a lot of people are seeing
NIL
as being
money.
Professional athletes that are getting paid, they're like, okay, well, I'm going to say something because now you're paid to be in there and you're paid to be an athlete, you know? So now you're going to have the extra scrutiny. I mean, does it make it right? No. But, I mean, you're a paid athlete now. So when you look like you're slacking, somebody now is going to probably say it even more so. Whether they're gambling or not,
right.
I think they're going to be more willing to say, hey, you had a really effing bad day today, buddy. Like, you look like you weren't even trying. It's one thing if we know that you've been in class and you're studying, you're doing this. We know you ain't in class. We know you ain't studying. You know, you just slacking. You out having fun spending that money, you know. But, it doesn't make it right. But I can definitely see where some people now consider them professional athletes. So they're treating them just like when they see LeBron James shit on the court. You know, and they're like, LeBron, what's going on, man? Like, guys, he's like one of the best players of all time. And people still want to find ways to say that he's not a good player. This is what the greatest ever. So, of course, they're going to, you know, they just pick with everybody. Yeah.
They shouldn't. All of our friends over at CloudBet, if you happen to be on the wrong side of a wager, let's not reach out to athletes, whether they be professional or college kids, and tell them that they owe you money.
Yes, I will tell you, I'm glad you brought up the CloudBet because I'm glad I figured out that because we had talked about how the odds present themselves in these crazy ways, and we tried to figure it out. I felt like I had to get a calculator.
It's. I will say, and somebody said it to me, and once you see it, I will say that the European way is actually easier.
Yeah.
But it's just not, to me, I'm so used to what those numbers, the American style, that like it doesn't weigh in my head. Like, for instance, the metric system. In reality, it is easier. But I don't know how big 10 centimeters is. You know what I mean? I just don't. I'm not used
to it.
It's
10 of those somethings.
You know what I mean? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. And so, same thing. Like, you know, you tell me somebody's a minus 300. I'm like, oh, wow, really? You know what I mean? But you know,
is that good?
Yeah.
Oh, no, yeah. Trust me. It's good to be minus.
But if you're like, it's a 0.7, I'm like, what? I don't know. So
you're right. Yeah, I think once you get used to it. But I was going
to
say,
I did find a way
you can actually convert it to American odds, and it runs pretty counter – or pretty exact to like some of the major ones over here. But if anything else, if you question the numbers, you can switch it and just double check.
Which we didn't know.
Which I didn't know before, you know, so now I'm like, cool on that. So, yeah, no, I'm really enjoying the CloudBet platform. The only thing I just wish they would just kick it a little bit is their parlays.
Yeah,
a little lacking on how you set up the parlays. It's not as much options as you'll find, or it's easy to include multiple fighters on a parlay card like you will see in some of the other ones, but I think it's a work in progress.
Definitely a work in progress, and we appreciate them. We appreciate their passion about combat sports, the fact that they're willing to partner with the PFL, partner with Karate Combat, partner with us, you know what I mean?
Yep.
They're really investing in the combat sports space. Because I really, truly believe, like, I don't think there's a better sport for betting on than fights.
Oh, it's the best.
You know what I mean? Like, there's one right after another.
They're always happening. There's no seasons.
That's it.
You know, I got a buddy that's making crazy loot. I shit you not. On fucking tennis.
What?
I'm just like, how? I'm like, nobody's doing it or whatever. And he's just whatever. Like, the other day, he turned something into like 30K. I was like,
on tennis.
You are nuts, dude. Like, individual bets, too, not like parlays. Like, me being the savage I would, I'd be like, I'd try to find a way to do a parlay, and I wouldn't even know who from anybody. Like, this chick's hot. This dude looks fit. You know, like, I'm going to make a parlay of these or whatever. But somehow he turned, I think he turned like, oh my God, it was like 900 or something. I think he said something like he got some check back from his mom or something and then turned it into 30K. I was like, well, you need to give that money back to your mama.
Yeah, I was about to say, give her 900 back, man. What are you doing?
But yeah, so yeah, wow. I mean, people are out there betting on all kinds of stuff.
Oh, I know.
But combat sports and fighting, especially, because it's all the time. There's no season. Because I know some people that focus on MLB.
Yep.
Some people that focus on the NFL. And there's a lot of games just within those, you know, avenues. But at this point, the season stops.
Yep.
MMA doesn't. You could literally be a degenerate
all
year
the time.
Round.
Well, and the thing to me is the your bets are going to happen quickly instead of like a 3-hour game or whatever like that. You know what I mean? It happens quickly. And I don't know. There's just like that sense of like real you're celebrating along with the athlete when you get it right or wrong. You know what I mean? Like it's just that, whereas like team sports sometimes, you know, the game's over and they're just like, all right, well, that wraps it up from the arena.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like, but it's not – now here, you know, people are going crazy and you know, the athletes are going nuts. And you're like, yeah, that's my dog there.
I picked that too.
So,
or me where I'm like, okay, well, that parlay's busted. Let me make another crazy parlay. How many crazy parlays can I make in one night just to lose them all?
I'll post my bets later this week on CloudBet. But I think – I'm torn, right, because Piper, like I'm always a big CFFC homer, right? So I want a homer for Piper, but I love Kelvin Gastelum, dude. Like I can't bet against Kelvin. So I think what I'm gonna do there is I'm gonna go the under on that one because I think they're gonna come out throwing. I know Kelvin's.
That's probably not a bad idea.
I know Kelvin's tough. Don't get me wrong. I know Kelvin can last.
I can definitely see it going a distance too.
I know
that's a tough one.
But I kind of like under. Like I feel like they're just gonna be cracking, and I feel like in Mexico City, like the fatigue might set in on either. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like
I think I saw on the media day Kelvin came out. He's been out there for a month.
Yeah.
Over a month. Like, that's smart.
Yep.
We'd seen people go up there on the normal fight arrival Tuesdays or whatever. That's not a lot.
I think Piper only went like a week and a half
that's
early.
What I thought.
Yeah.
That's why I heard something like that. Because somebody said, maybe it was him or maybe it was Ursig or somebody on the media day, said he felt it. He's like, that first day, just walking up and down the stairs, he's like, I really felt it. He's like, I feel better. He's like, I feel good now. He's like, I'm not worried about it. But he was like, yeah, that first day or two, he was like, holy cow. Like, it's legit. You know, I mean, it's a big, big difference. So those things are definitely something to play into. But, I mean, also with Piper and, I mean, with his background with wrestling and all the other stuff, I'm not too worried about his cardio.
No.
I think there's definitely going to be some adjustment. But, yeah, I mean, if that becomes like a slob and knocker right in the middle of the cage, one, I don't think he's going to want to make just a stand and bang.
I
guarantee he's going to shoot, you know, look for his moment to try to get the takedown. But that being said, I mean, he's I think he's feeling his hands a little bit because he's seen it do some work before. So he might be like, hey,
how
cool would it be to fucking finish Kelvin Gastelum?
That
would be huge.
And Kelvin's got an insane chin, but Piper cracks.
He does. But, man, when you go back and look at like that fight against Izzy, that was probably one of the coolest and best fights when people think about like between those two guys.
One of the best ever.
They were just literally beating the crap out of each other, and neither one was ready to go down. I mean, so, like, if we get into something like that, you know what Kelvin's used to taking and what he can do, and we've never seen Piper get tested like that. I think – I mean, I trust that he doesn't have the reps on his body.
Right.
I think that bodes well, but also, too, you know, like, we also don't know. We've never seen him push to the end to see how much he's willing to go through when it gets to that point. You know, at some point when you're getting a beat, you're that ass beaten, and you're half your body's like, stop. I don't want to get off this stool.
Yep.
Will he get off the stool? I think he's going to be fine. I think he will get off the stool, but until that moment happens, you never know.
Can't wait.
Kelvin will push him there. So, I think taking the unders, it's not a bad bet.
But,
it's not a bad bet.
But
you never know.
But I can see it ending either way because I can't see Pfeiffer's power factoring, or I can't see Pfeiffer getting tired.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's something. So
one I think is going to go the distance, and I think I'm going to put that in later on. Because I went with, did I already put that one? I put on one. I can't remember which one. I think the main event's going to go the distance.
I do too.
You know, I think they're great guys or whatever, I see that one going the distance.
I do too, yeah.
I mean, I think that's
that
a pretty solid, easy bet. And I think that's what I was trying to do. I think I was trying to do a parlay with that going the distance and Moreno getting the win. I think Moreno definitely is going to get it,
yep.
You know. But it wouldn't let me put a parlay, and I was kind of upset about that. But
Big fight, man, for both those guys.
It's huge.
It is, you know, listen.
Ursa getting another main event.
It is funny though. Like, I mean, and you know me, man. I love the flyweight division.
Yep.
And I love Brandon Moreno.
Yep.
But it is funny to think about, like, those two guys just visually looking at him and going like, bro, those are savage badasses. You know what I mean? Like, if they were in a bar or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he like ran into him. You're like, what are you doing? Like, bro, get out of here. And then they would light you up. So it's actually a funny matchup in terms of just the visual of like these are two badasses, but we know they are badasses.
Yeah.
They would end you. So
I didn't really, on paper I thought Ursic was much taller than Brandon, going from memory. He's on paper, he's only an inch taller. He looks taller than that.
Interesting.
Is that right? It says he's 5'8". He looks taller than 5'8", doesn't he? Going off memory, I mean, granted we see him a lot of times sitting down, but I feel like,
I was gonna say, I don't think I've ever stood next to him.
Man, and a lot of flyweights are just so, maybe just
it's just because
just so
a relative size, size. Just because he looks taller,
being taller than
because he's standing next to like 5'3" guys, 5'4" guys, so he looks
like,
taller.
That dude, how does he even make the weight?
Yeah. I don't think I've ever stood next to Steve Ursic, so I wouldn't know, but
yeah. And so I think he missed most of the last media days that he maybe was in there.
Listen, I was putting in work behind the scenes
right.
So I could get this new general manager
new
position.
Gig.
That's what I've been
did
all
it,
this
but
time.
You did it. You did
know
it.
That it was for a reason. It was not for me just being lazy. I was actually doing things. But
so,
I had,
so what are you going to be? Are you going to be there next Wednesday?
I think so. I think
your mouth.
Because my boss is coming in town, but I don't think he's coming in town until Thursday.
Well, look at that. Here I was setting you up to just say, no.
I'm not
going to
be. No. As of right now.
Wow.
I'm not saying that things won't change because they can't.
This sounds familiar.
As of right now, I'm anticipating with the U.S. being in there, I'm anticipating being there. Now, I'm not sure what I'm going to do on fight day yet.
Yeah.
Because Rob Hadak is here.
Boss man.
So I don't know if I like just come and hang out in the audience and like sit with him and then leave with him whenever.
Isn't that what you normally do?
I mean. Or if I just sit.
Or you just sit at the media table.
Just sit
next
at
the
media
to the
table. One has free cocktails. The other doesn't.
Oh, do that one.
Yeah.
Well, we saw what happened last time. You came straight off the flight. So
I paced myself.
I was
going to
say,
because
you said that you were in bed immediately after you left.
Immediately
or whatever.
Afterwards.
Because I remember I saw the pictures that your wife put. I was like, oh, he is trash.
I was exhausted. I paced myself pretty well the last time for my birthday celebration. Yeah, I paced myself because I knew like if I went hard, like I was just going to fall asleep.
Yeah.
So I didn't. I paced myself pretty good. And about halfway through the main card, that's when we started like going for the shots and stuff. But at that point, I knew the night was almost over.
You're like,
so
we're almost done.
Yeah. At that point, I had only plain sleep and like a 1 hour power nap.
Did you ever two fist it at some point?
Yeah.
A beer and a shot, or was it just mixed drink?
No, just a beer and a shot, but nothing. No, yeah, I wasn't carrying around like two or anything. So
you did the shot at the table?
Yeah. I paced myself. But enough about me. Enough about me. Let's talk about some more important things. Cain Velasquez.
Yes.
You know what's funny? I said going into this, like, I want to see Cain walk, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people did. And what he ended up getting, he gets sentenced for 5 years. But I think for anybody that feels – I think you got to feel good about this, I guess, is where I'm going. At first I was a little bit frustrated. Like, I just don't think it's right that he has to go back to jail. I don't. And I get it, man. I get that he broke serious laws. Like,
yep.
The fact that – like, even – I think it made it worse that he was, like, chasing in a car and shooting. Like, even if it had just been at a house or something, like, I feel like maybe it would have been lighter. But, like, you're really putting innocent bystanders
at
risk.
That was
it.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
That was the biggest thing.
And so, and I know he's accepted responsibility for it. So, anyway, I guess I just want to weigh in and say, look, if you're a Cain Velasquez supporter, which I think pretty much everybody is, I know there are people that are absolute sticklers for law as well, and they should be. There's a reason we have laws in society. This really was not a bad result because, A, and I think the big thing was, A, he got 5 years, which is not a lot for attempted murder, let's be honest.
I'm saying,
and
let's
the
not
plethora
forget,
of other charges.
Yes. Attempted murder, folks.
Yeah. So that, yes. So that's really not much for attempted murder. And he gets credit for the house arrest that he's on, right?
Because he's been on house arrest for like 2 years.
Yeah.
Right?
So he's which I think that's really cool as well, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, I was actually kind of thinking about it. I was actually thinking about today before I came over here. I'm like, I mean, I don't really know what the terms of house arrest are. Like, can you walk outside? Like, certainly you can walk outside. Like, maybe you just can't walk off
for specific reason. You could stay on property,
right?
And even that, I don't think
like,
I don't think he I don't think he had a monitor on him, but it could have been. That's one. Sometimes when you're on house arrest, you have a monitor,
right?
Like an ankle monitor. So if you go a certain distance away from the house, which usually allows you to stay in the yard.
I was gonna say, like, at least go outside, get some fresh air. I mean, look, it sure as hell better than being in a jail cell. That's for sure.
100%.
But I wonder, like, how difficult it would be to just like. I was thinking about that. Like, hey, dude, you can't leave this house at all for 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times it's but I mean, like, sometimes, I mean, you're, like, you're being checked in. You have to check in. You have to do other particular ones. And it just depends. It's not like it's a one and done. Like, they do make concessions and things of that sort where, you know, you could call your I guess, officer that you're dealing with that's supervising you or whatever. Maybe they did allow him to go to the grocery store with his family or to take his kid to school if it's supervised or something. You have to keep track or whatever. Usually on some of those things that
like
they either do have
in,
a monitor.
Check out. You have to.
And again, this is attempted murder. Maybe if it was he was on house arrest and he did have a murder charge or whatever, maybe he would have had a collar or something on his ankle or something. But yeah, just to be able to have the freedom of being around his house. I mean, the thing with that is
he's got a pretty decent house too.
Yeah,
you know what
and
I mean?
Like,
it's probably all right.
But I mean, like, being able to even walk around your yard and being at home is so much better than what the other, you know, alternative would have been.
Being
so
with,
I'm sure
being
he
with your family
been,
every night.
Yeah,
being with your family every night.
I'm sure
you know
he
what
was
mean?
Really, really grateful for whatever 100%. He had. But you know, to get you know then credited for that time. So say what is it, a year and a half?
I think he's got like a year and a half, and I think they're saying that he could get some like. You know, time off of that
for good behavior
for good
and
behavior.
Other stuff.
So, you
now
know.
And I brought this up when I was talking to Nolan King, who I got to give him a lot of credit. MMA Kings, he was behind. He's been following this from the get go. I mean, I think
he
if
was
anybody
at, like,
else,
pretty much every hearing.
Yeah, I think if there was, if I had to point a finger at somebody that was probably watching and paying attention to all that shit better than anybody, I would give Nolan credit for that for sure.
100%.
I know there are other guys out there doing it, but Nolan, I know from the very get go, was really, really on that stuff. I was talking with him, and a lot of people are like, well, you know, can't Trump just pardon him? And we've seen Trump has pushed a lot of things out there, you know, of what he can and cannot do. But typically, a president cannot pardon anything that's not a federal crime.
Right.
So that means that the governor, it would be upon the governor to issue a pardon or something along those lines. So could the, you know, Governor Newsom, I believe it's Newsom, right?
I think so.
Try to gain some favor. Could he preemptively do something on his own without being asked by the President Trump? He sure could. But could President Trump reach out to the governor as well and maybe make some amends from other thing, a little quid pro quo, you know, like, hey, we've been asking you this, but how about this? You know what this guy's been there for, you know it was kind of shitty. You know, he's you know, apologize for his crimes.
To hear that the judge was basically like in tears as he was issuing the sentence, I mean, that tells you, like, everybody knows, like, it's such. I mean, I know it's not, it's because we know the guy, but come on, man. Like, it's such a terrible situation.
Tough situation.
So,
I mean,
so maybe it could.
Something could happen. I mean, but even knowing that we have seen people, especially when it's only about a year, year and a half, he could go in there for 8 months and then easily get, let go for good behavior or something like that. I mean, a lot of that goes in. It would have to be the family. Guillarte's family could try to petition and say keep him in there for the full thing.
Civilly sued,
but that's
right going
to say, like, a lot of things are going to change because that guy, he's getting his sentencing or his court date is coming up soon.
Right.
So that's going to change the narrative of what a lot of other people care about as well, depending on how that goes. I mean, I think already a lot of people are pegging him as being a real POS, you know, but I mean, if it comes out in fact that he does get – you know, convicted and has to go away and do some stuff, people are going to be clamoring again for Kane to be released because of, it was just a natural reaction of what he wanted to do. Now, that being said, I mean, it could have been a lot worse if somebody was seriously injured or a complete bystander not related was hurt. Then I think a lot of people, regardless of what you're trying to say, what you understand why Kane did what he did, but if Kane actually killed somebody, some innocent bystander, you got to understand that all this would be out the window.
100%. Because and you're talking about a stray bullet.
Yep.
There was a car chase, so what if they go through an intersection and T-bone somebody? Or, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of ways people could have died, not just one. So it's not like you're saying, well, this potentially could have happened. No, there's a high likelihood. Like, it's almost, it's a little bit miraculous nobody did get hurt as you guys are in a car chase and firing bullets. So, I mean, and again, Kane has come out and said, look, I was wrong. I should not have done that. Now, we all empathize why he did what he did. I mean, like I think it was Dana White that said, like, he basically did what every parent says they would do. Yep. You know what I mean? But he actually went out and did it. And I think as a parent, every parent pretty much feels exactly the same. But you can't. You just can't do that.
I mean, I think a lot of people, I mean, even if people were wondering, you know, if they let him out, if they would have let him go. And I know it. I'd seen some people, and I was saying, even saying myself, I was like, you know, give him 10 years supervised probation.
Yeah,
take his gun, his right to ever own a gun.
Absolutely,
but table the years. You know, like, give him 10 years, maintain a clean stays clean away from
anything else.
If you fuck up,
if you do anything,
then it's all back on the table.
You're going back to do this. Yeah. That's what I would. That's what I wanted to see.
But even then, you know, I could see where somebody's like, 10 years is too much. You know, I think if the fact that now it's like this, and he could be done with it after this, and be done, and maybe, I don't know if there's any stipulation.
I think
of
he still has like I think he still has 4 years supervised probation
afterwards.
After that. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. This is not a bad sentence.
This is a good result.
This is a good result.
It could have been better, but I think this maintains a good sense where it doesn't look like the judge was a fanboy. You know, I think the judge understood the severity. Like you said, he was moved by the situation, but he also has a very important role to maintain that there are, you know, ramifications to actions, and we want to make it seem like, you know, you do something wrong, you will get punished for it.
Yep.
You know, so I think it was a great result, and Kane was happy with it. His family was over the moon. You know, I mean, like, it's good. It's good. You
100%.
Know, I mean, and then he'll be, after this, 4 years, that's nothing.
Yeah.
And just keep your nose clean.
And he's
just
not going to do anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's like, that, as everybody says, like, he's not a criminal. He's not a bad guy. He's not. He won't trip up, man. So, so it sucked. I wanted to see him walk free, but honestly, once I had a chance to sit back and think about it, you know what? This is about as good as you could hope for, man. It's as good as you could hope for.
I heard there were, like, even inmates and shit were like, free Kane. Like,
really?
So he's going to go in there and, like, they're going to be like, bro, we get it.
Well, that's awesome. I'm kind of interested because I didn't find out, and I'm sure it's already been released, like, where he ends up. Or I don't know if they released that information or not, but I know
it'll become public knowledge eventually.
Eventually. But I know, like, in the beginning,
they probably already did. I mean, whoever took him into custody right then, I'm sure they are tied to certain jails in the state.
I know they said in his initial holding, because he did like 8 or 9 months off the start. I know they said he got treated pretty well, like he was taken care of, and so hopefully it's.
I mean, at this point, I'm sure they're going to take him in. The fact, knowing that even if it was a year and a half, that's a short time compared to a lot of the cats that are going to be in there incarcerated for a long time. So he might already be in a different wing that's separate from some of the guys that are lifers or whatever.
I want to see him in there with, like, the dudes that are in for tax evasion, not like the dudes that are in there for, like, well, no, we put you with all the other attempted murderers. Like, there's kind of a little difference. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, when you got guys in there that have nothing to lose, you never know if they just want to drag somebody else down just to make your life worse. Like, I know you're out in a year, but I'm going to change that, you know.
Oh, like, 100%. Or, like, I got life. I don't care. I'm going to try to get props by beating up the former UFC heavyweight champion. You know what I mean? Like, so hopefully they got him in a country club somewhere. So there's sort of one. So I think that was a good result. Then there was some other news that came out, right? Derek Minner, Jeff Molina. You remember the whole situation with James Krause as well. They got their punishment from the Nevada State Athletic Commission that was finally announced this week. Now, the timing of it's a little bit weird, I must admit. They announced – it was wild because obviously we've known about this story for years, and then it just has been so quiet and went away, and we would ask about it. It's like, I don't know. It's still under investigation, et cetera, et cetera. So at the Nevada State Athletic Commission meeting this week, they announced Derek Minner has agreed to an adjudication agreement. The charge was essentially the non-disclosure of a serious injury before a fight in his 2022 pre-fight medical questionnaire. You remember he was fighting Shaylin Nurnabiyeke at the Apex. He had a terrible knee injury coming into it. It became evident very clearly. But it wasn't just that. It was all the betting and stuff that was done around it. So Derek Minner was the fighter himself. He gets a 29-month suspension, which actually terminated the next day afterwards. Had to pay prosecution fees of $235.56, which, by the way, the Nevada State Athletic Commission must have the most affordable lawyers. In the history. I mean, $235. Yeah. That's not a lot of prosecution fee, right?
Like, I think we've seen other like ones where they popped and other ones, and it's always like 100 and something. Yeah, or, like, so, yeah. Like
that's like a bill. Would they bill him for like 10 minutes worth of work? But anyway, but I think it's – so. Interesting. 29 months for him. Now, Jeff Molina, who was in his corner, got 36 months. So he actually got longer. But the reason being for them is that he knew about it. He didn't disclose it, which what cornerman is going to disclose that their fighter is injured? None.
Yep, none.
But he had the extra step of betting on it as well. And they said, like, sizable bets were made on his behalf. I think he's come out and said, like, dude, there was nothing bigger than, like, $500. So do you consider that sizable? I feel bad for Molina. I really do, man, because 3 years, and again, neither one of them faced a big fine. He also just got the prosecution fee of $235.56, so not a big fine, but he has missed out on 3 years worth of income as a fighter, which is not easy. I mean, obviously, say what you will about fighter pay, but anything's better than zero. He's missed out on 3 years. I feel a little bit bad for him, but I got to be honest, like, in this one, I get it. You know what I mean? Like, I've always said, to be honest, I don't care if fighters bet. To me, the cardinal sin in sports wagering of any kind, and take it back to like probably one of the most famous situations of all, the Pete Rose situation, right? I mean, the cardinal sin is if you bet against yourself and take a dive, or if you bet against your team. And Jeff Molina did that here. You know what I mean? And so for that reason, like, I do feel bad for him. I don't think he necessarily understood the ramifications of what he's doing. I know that the UFC has basically tried to tell these athletes you can't bet on anything, and I think that's more for just appearances' sake. You know what I mean? Like how you know, like Pete Rose. Pete Rose said, "Well, I never bet against my team, or I never bet on baseball." Like, well, he did, and you know that sort of thing. So they want to make a limit of it. So I do feel personally bad for Jeff Molina. I don't think he meant to do anything. And he's, you know, he's, I've seen him come out and be like, what about Conor McGregor posting his $1 million bet slips? Like, why, you know, why is it? Well, A, that's Conor McGregor, so that's one thing. But B, like I said, when you bet against yourself or bet against your own team because you know that that to me is like, I can't argue with you at that one. I can't make a case for you.
Well, it's funny, you mentioned the fees. So I went back and just tried to pull up some of the other commission fees. So this particular one, like you said, the fine was $235.56. I just pulled one. This one, I think this was from you back in 2022. Carlos Felipe was suspended for 18 months. His legal fee was... where to go? $326. When John Kennedy, a power slap guy, got suspended, his was $326. When Marc-Andre Barrio had his win overturned, his was $254.38.
I mean, these guys got a good deal, man. Maybe they had like a Groupon discount.
And then Walt Harris, when he got suspended for the Drostanolone metabolites, $392.60. So they threw the book at him.
I'm telling you, man.
You know, so yeah, these guys.
They got off like they had a Groupon discount for their
lawyer
fees.
That's like one of the cheaper ones. Yeah. They're like, you're lucky it was done on a Tuesday. Yeah. You get the cheaper route, you know?
Maybe a deputy or something. So anyway, the James Krause thing is still not done. We haven't heard anything from the Nevada State Athletic Commission. We understand it's still under investigation. The thing I heard from the beginning, and I haven't checked into this in a long time. The thing I heard in the beginning with the Krause thing is it wasn't just the bets on these fights. It was like tax stuff as well, and like was money being funneled incorrectly into offshore accounts, and you're not paying income on that, and that sort of thing.
It's crazy. So it's not done.
It's crazy. It is crazy. Yeah, I mean, because now, I mean, you're talking about, again, Derek Minner, 29-month suspension is what he was given that terminated yesterday. So, I mean, it's already been damn near, you know, coming up on 3 years.
The only reason, so it must be the feds are still investigating if there was offshore stuff. That's the only reason why.
Yep, that's the understanding. The feds are.
And maybe those people got sacked. So maybe he doesn't have to worry about anything. Maybe they're just waiting for new investigators to get assigned.
You think James Krause is like, yes,
he's
those.
Like, get
those,
rid of them all.
Come on.
Get them all.
These guys ain't doing nothing.
He's like, guys, I'm about to be good.
Elon, I'll give you 2-1 on if you cut. I shouldn't say that. I like James Krause. That was a cheap shot. A couple other little news nuggets. Ryan Bader released from the PFL, or at least negotiated his release.
Yes, he actually did.
I should say that. It's interesting, right? Because I think a lot of people are attacking the PFL. I actually think this is smart business. Like, they know that they don't want to pay the type of money that these contracts have right now, because they think it'll be kind of irresponsible towards what they're building. And I agree with them. It's smart business, to be honest with you. But, it makes you wonder what they got in the whole acquisition of Bellator, right? Like, they got the tape library, I guess. I mean, they came out with some footage the other day of Jason Jackson and Andre Koreshkin, and where they had, like, their old footage and stuff. So, I guess, like, cool, they can use that. But, I mean, as far as, like, real fighter contracts, they haven't kept a lot of them. But, again, remember, it was an acquisition that did not require any capital outlay from them. So, from a business perspective, again, I just think you have to understand, like, and my biggest thing has been, and here we go, I'll get another phone call and I'll get talked about. But my biggest thing has just been the communication, right? Communication. Like, if you're not going to let these guys fight because you're just like, look, man, I'm looking at your contract and holy shit, that is way too much money for us to pay right now. Fine. Yep. Let me go. Let me go. You know what I mean? Like, I understand. Yep. You can't afford to pay this anymore. I get it. Let's get out of here. You know what I mean?
I won't hold you to it.
That's it.
Just let me go.
Just let me go. Now, if you're going to say, no, you're required to, and you owe me X amount. Now we're talking about legal situations and all that. But if a fighter is saying, like, hey, you're not – like, the whole – this again, the last time, this was over the whole Aaron Pico situation where he's just like, I've been told 3 times I'm going to fight, and they keep changing it. And he's like, just let me go. I think just let him go. As long as they do that, I don't think it's a big deal. It's just the communication, not communicating with these guys. So, anyway, the other thing, though, that it does point out, man, like, as a high-level free agent right now, there's not a lot of options on the table for you.
Yeah.
Like where's Ryan Bader going to come back to the UFC? I don't know. I don't know if they're going to be willing to take him on at this point. Now, fortunately, he fights in the higher weight classes, which are pretty lean right now. So maybe he could. Maybe it's worth it. The GFL, but, I mean, they're still – they haven't held their first event yet. And until they hold their first event, I think everybody's going to have a little bit of concern, a little bit of are they really going to get it done? So I don't know. One championship, to their credit, they're starting to hold more MMA fights. For a while, it seemed like they were, like, purely – Muay Thai and kickboxing, and now it looks like they're doing some MMA as well. So, anyway, I just want to say I do think it's actually smart, conservative business from the PFL to let these athletes go. But you just kind of wonder what they ended up with from Bellator.
Where's he going, GFL?
That's what I'm saying. There's not. I mean, what else?
Where are you gonna go?
That's it.
I mean, it's one thing, I guess, just to get your options back, but maybe that means he can do some bare knuckle boxing or do something. But I'm not sure if they were stopping him from doing bare knuckle boxing in the first place. But outside of the GFL, there is no place. So it's like, why leave a place if you know you're eventually going to get something, unless you have something guaranteed lined up, something. A guy like him, he's not going to get a shot back at the UFC. He's getting, he's getting older. He's still a good fighter, but is he going to be a champ again? No.
Not in the UFC.
Not in the UFC. I mean, you think he's good. But some of the PFL cats and stuff, I just don't know if he'd beat the top of the guys over there anymore either.
So, yeah, at the very top. I mean, he's still obviously competitive.
Yes,
and he's still elite, but but is he number one?
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I mean, with the right matchup, but I guess that's anybody. Anybody said, I'd be perfect if you give me the perfect matchups every time, but unfortunately that's not. And those guys are big over there, man. Those big boys, light heavies and heavies, are huge.
Yeah.
Some of the cats over there, like, he was never that he was, like, huge. It was just his wrestling negated a lot of that stuff. But now we're seeing guys that can defend the takedown, and they bring that power and just, like,
and
you can't take those shots, man.
And then you start talking about age discrepancies. I know heavyweights. Oh, heavyweights can go longer than balls, but still, man, you start anybody. You're 40 and you're facing somebody that's 25, 28.
Nobody wants to see Bader face down on a mat again. Like, that's not good.
Definitely not. It's not good. Hey, I tell you something funny. I was listening to this was maybe like a week and a half ago, 2 weeks. So maybe it's, but I had forgotten to say anything about it. But it was the Sports Illustrated media podcast, basically. It's a podcast that just kind of talks about the sports media, right? That's what it's covering. But it was interesting because they were having a discussion. The hosts were having a discussion about how, they were talking about basketball, NBA basketball, and how some of the games just don't seem special anymore. It's just every sport, right? Like, yeah. They were just like, well, unless it's the big games on TBS and it's got the, you know, or TNT or whatever, you know, the ones that Shaq and Barkley do and all that. Unless it's that, like, it just doesn't feel big, and I just don't.
Because the commentary team.
Oh my god! It literally just sounded exactly like all the discussion that's going on. We're like, the apex. It's the apex era. Yeah. I can't even
Does
watch
somebody
the sport anymore.
Tweet out about who's the commentary team so people know what events to watch? Then does that happen?
That does happen. People do report on that.
They do report that.
That's when you. That's
so
when
that's
you know.
When people know and they're like, "Oh, Shaq's going to be that basketball game. I better tune in."
That's one that matters.
Yeah, Shaq's on the call.
It's just. I think we've talked about this for a long time. I think people have to realize with the UFC, and we've said this for years, is that if there's 40 events a year, don't feel like you have to watch every single one of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to watch every single. It's. There's no other sport where you watch every single game. And every single, you know, be a little bit more selective. That's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay to be selective and, like, not watch it. It doesn't mean the product is bad. Like I said, when the two last place teams in the NBA play, we don't go, what's the fucking NBA doing? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what are they doing? Let's get rid of these. You just go, well, you know, this is a game that I don't really need to watch now.
I'm just not going to watch it.
And that's okay.
I mean, if you're not getting paid to watch MMA and cover every event, you don't have to watch them.
You don't have to watch it all. Really want unless it's your job. You don't have to watch like 6.5 hours every single week.
You know, some of us are just diehards. I don't give a F. Some of you might be on vacation with your family and choose to spend 6.5 hours watching an event overseas instead of hanging out on the porch with your family.
Some of you might be doing commentary for an MMA event and still have your phone open with another MMA event on there that you have playing in the background as well. You might be like that. But not everybody has to be.
Yeah.
It's okay.
And you don't need to bitch about it.
It's just how the sport is evolving.
It's so funny.
All right, listen. I did do an interview this week that I want to share. I want to start. I think now that, again, as my schedule's changing, my responsibilities are changing, my availability changes a little bit, I think I'll be able to share some more interviews here and there that we can do this.
I think that's glorious.
Look what you did there. I got a chance to speak with Glory Hall of Famer and current analyst Joseph Valtellini. I'm going to get a chance to talk to some of these Glory guys. I've had a chance. Listen, I like Marshall Zelaznik, man. I like Marshall Zelaznik a lot. With him back in charge, and to be honest with you, I just think, you know, a chance to look at some alternatives out there. I do feel like people are looking for maybe some alternatives of, like, other kind of combat sports. Maybe you are tired of the UFC and you're looking for something else. I don't know. I feel like Glory's in a good position right now to do some big things. So I've been speaking to some of their guys kind of leading into a lot of this news and big things that are going on. And this is my first time speaking with Joseph Valtellini. I'm just going to tell you now, and I think you'll feel it in this interview, his energy, his passion, his knowledge – off the charts, man. If you haven't checked out his YouTube channel, it's worth checking out him as well. We talk about that quite a bit as well, but you can just really sense his enthusiasm for kickboxing. And so this is my first time talking to him. Want to share that with you guys here. So here is the Glory Hall of Famer and analyst, Joseph Valtellini. It is the Glory Kickboxing Hall of Famer, Bazooka Joe Valtellini. He is a busy, busy man. He's a Glory analyst now. He's a gym owner. He's got a growing YouTube channel. So I appreciate you taking some time, my man. And I want to talk to you about Glory and what's going on, because you've been around this organization, I mean, damn near from the start, right? And to me right now, it feels like the momentum with the broadcast deals, the big tournaments that are coming up, the return to the United States, it feels like the momentum is, like, greater than it's ever been. You, who's been there right from the start, does it feel similar to you as well?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, kickboxing has always been this little element here, this little niche sport, unfortunately. But in Europe, we're massive. In Asia, we're massive. We had a nice big run here in the United States. And it just, I think the UFC brand just became so popular. But there's a lot of really still passionate kickboxing fans who are still hanging around. But as soon as those MMA fans start jumping on, I think that's where we're going to start taking off. So us coming back to North America, I think is a good move for us. And we just need those UFC fans, man. And you having us on your show is great for us as well. So we appreciate everything you're doing to help push us.
Absolutely, man. Happy to be working with you guys and getting a chance to talk to y'all. Like,
yeah.
You know, listen, it's interesting to me, right? Because I think you hit the nail on the head, right? Like, I mean, I love the UFC, as you know, passionate about mixed martial arts. Great what they've done in the combat sports space. But it is always weird to me because, even MMA fans, I feel like they really are kind of kickboxing fans at heart. Like they boo when it goes to the ground. So I've never understood like why there's kind of a disconnect sometimes and why people don't kind of jump on that kickboxing bandwagon. So you've seen it. You've seen it globally. I mean, what do you think the disconnect is sometimes?
Well, I just think, like I said before, the UFC brand has become so big. So now people are more interested in seeing small gloves, maybe the bleeding. They think it's more violent. But to me, when you look at kickboxing, it's clean striking. It's a clean sport. You understand what's going on. You're trying to kick, punch someone in the head. As soon as the casual MMA fan, the fight goes on the ground, they're not really understanding what's happening, what's going on, and those types of things. So I think kickboxing is easy to understand. We get good knockouts. And let me tell you, the live event kickboxing is something special. Like if you can see and be in an arena and hear those echoes of two heavyweights smashing and killing each other, I mean, it's something special. Like I've been to a ton of UFC events and you can't even see half the time. You're looking over the camera guy. It's hard to see. The cage is in the way. So, I mean, even from a live event, kickboxing is really special and entertaining.
Yeah, Glory does a hell of a job too, man. The production they do is really good. But that is an interesting part that I hadn't thought about in a long time, because we used to have this debate in MMA about cage versus a ring. And honestly, for MMA, I think cage is the right surface, so to speak, because I don't like the restarts on the ground and all that happens. But from a viewing perspective, and that's just the competition side, from a viewing perspective, a ring really is way better for a viewer to see.
Oh, yeah. It's nice. It's clean. I talk it like classy, you know? Like, I just keep using the word classy because it's nice. The event itself, like, even when you see us walking out, it's on an elevated platform. You don't let your corners walk out with you in Glory. So the fighter's presented on the stage, walking out by himself on this elevated platform, you know? So, I mean, I think we're doing a good job at bringing that type of show. So, I mean, hey, I'm a big MMA fan myself, train fighters. Have UFC guys train with me. So, I mean, I love both sports, but I'm telling you, there's something special about kickboxing.
I love it, man. You've touched on a lot of things I want to talk. First of all, your passion, man. It's so evident.
Oh, you can tell. It's like I'm all hyped up.
I'm telling you, man. But you know where I see it too is your YouTube channel, man. Bazooka Joe, if people want to check out. Man, you do such a great job there, and congratulations, right? You just got over 100,000 subscribers. But
yeah, thank you.
I think you do such a great job of breaking down technique and explaining analysis and why things work. And those, I think you do such a great job at it. So I just want to guess, well, I guess was the inspiration just that you love, you know, talking about the sport? And did you ever think that you'd have 100,000 subscribers on your channel?
Yeah, I mean, 100,000 is great, but I feel I should still be at 1,000,000. Come on. I mean, that's the first goal, but I have high standards. But actually, growing up, I started with traditional martial arts. I started with Taekwondo at the age of basically 4 years old. I started martial arts. I got my black belt at 10 years old. And one of the requirements to be a black belt at my club was to teach martial arts. So we had to teach the classes. So I learned to be comfortable in front of an audience, teaching curriculum, teaching technique. Then during my high school university time, I actually went to school to study to become a teacher. So I went to university for health and phys ed, got my teaching degree, and then I taught at a high school in Toronto for 10 years while I was running for my world championship. So I've always been a natural teacher. I love to teach, and now owning my own gym is just, I'm limited to Toronto and Scarborough. So the channel lets me get out to the entire world. So I'm passionate about it. Hopefully it comes off in my teaching. And I'm here to not only build kickboxing, obviously, but I want to show my knowledge and just continue to help people out, because I think martial arts is a great way of living and a great way of life. So
absolutely, we're here. You do a great job, Ed, man. I definitely recommend people check it out. So you talked about the fact that you've been at the big UFC events. I mean, you've worked with legends, right? Like Mark Hamill, yeah. Sam Stout, I mean, pioneers of the game. But even newer generation, Chad Laprise, Mitch Gagnon, Malcolm Gordon. You've worked with all of them. Talk to me about your approach there, I guess, right? Because I got to think it's a little bit challenging to go between teaching kickboxing for kickboxing and kickboxing for mixed martial arts, right? Because you can't do them the same. You can't execute techniques the same way.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of a learning curve, but the big thing here in Canada is, it sounds crazy to say, but professional kickboxing is still illegal. You can have MMA here, yes. So in Toronto, you can have a professional UFC event, which we do, but you can't have professional kickboxing here in Toronto. So naturally, like a lot of people in, you know, Canada see UFC. They want to learn it. So even with me, before Glory came back, there was K1. And K1 had two divisions, a heavyweight division and a lightweight division. I'm a welterweight. I can't hit either division. So I was like, my fight career's dead. There's nothing for me in kickboxing. So then I trained MMA. I had a couple fights lined up that never went through, but ultimately Glory called me one day, and I was actually doing a Muay Thai fight against Mehdi Begdad, who actually fought in the UFC. So yeah. I beat him in Los Angeles, and that same day Glory messaged me and asked me for a two-fight contract. So if it wasn't for Glory and Robbie Timmers hitting me up, I probably would have been UFC, MMA, full tilt all the way.
That's amazing. I don't want to harp on Toronto there, but that's just ridiculous. I mean, if you can have a big martial arts, why can't you have kickboxing?
Preach, Mr. Morgan. Preach. That's ridiculous. Crazy.
So what's your approach when you're coaching guys? I mean, do you teach them like, hey, here's the pure art, or are you obviously saying, but you got to adjust your stance because you're worried about the takedown, or I wouldn't use this technique? Like, what's your approach when you're coaching?
Well, it's mean you have to adjust a little bit. And I'm someone who I feel like there's a lot of universal principles as well, right? Like, I mean, slipping a punch in kickboxing, slipping a glove in MMA. So I use more of those universal principles that apply in both. But some of the big don'ts, like, we have to switch the stance, you know, we're moving a little bit more. We don't throw blind kicks, especially a calf kick without a setup now being countered. So it's a little bit more movement, angles, and changing up the defense. If you watch kickboxing, us kickboxers like this high guard style defense, you know, which is called our Dutch guard or high guard, but that in MMA is the worst position you can be in. If your hands are pinned to your head, there's too many, you know, holes for a small glove to hit. So movement, head movement, more boxing, taking on angles, working weight distribution to have the ability to sprawl if you need to. So I mean, a lot of differences. And even our clinching is, we're here, right? We're learning body locks, underhooks, you know. So it's a different game, but I mean, I have a good team around me as well. I mean, I got Canadian MMA pioneers working with me, training with me. So I mean, we just worked and together evolved, and Canada is all MMA, unfortunately, right now. So I have to adapt.
That's wild, man. Well, I love the way you break things down, man. The subtle details that you pick up on. So talk to me about like the crossover success we've seen. You know, you look at guys like, obviously the biggest ones, Israel Adesanya, Alex Pereira. That's the ones that everybody talks about. But, you know, you look over in PFL, Cedric Doumbé. I mean, that dude's an absolute superstar as well, and he's having success. What do you think the key is to them? Because we see these ebbs and flows in MMAs, right? Where it's like, you know, for a long time, we thought, oh, an elite level striker, well, the wrestler, the grappler is just going to eliminate their strengths. But those guys have been able to succeed at the very highest level.
Yeah, and I think those names you mentioned in particular, they had a style of kickboxing that when you saw them kickbox, you knew they would be good for MMA, you know, because they move, they're evasive. Like Adesanya is never going to sit there in high guard pocket. Pereira slips and counters. Doumbé is very dynamic. It's more of those other style of kickboxers that would be a little bit harder. Like, I mean, just take an example of like a Rico Verhoeven. Like if he were to transition to MMA, he's got more of that walk forward, high guard style. So that might be a little bit more difficult to transition into MMA with. But again, him being an athlete, I'm sure it's something natural. And hopefully that Francis Ngannou fight comes to fruition for him. But there's also big news. I heard you got some breaking news coming up as well for Mr. Verhoeven.
Yeah, but, man. So, well, yeah. We got a lot of things going on with Rico Verhoeven right now, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. So I think it's just their style was great for a dynamic kickboxing style that allowed them to transition to kickboxing a little bit quicker and successfully.
Awesome, man. Well, listen, you touched on that, Rico Verhoeven, the news recently coming out. Art of Vadatov is back in Glory. Wild, because the guy goes on the Contender Series. We think he's going to the UFC. Instead, he decides, no, not doing the UFC. I'm going back to Glory. I'm going to face Rico. And it's going to be the main event of Glory 100, this incredible, we now know, two-day celebration of kickboxing. Mm-hmm. I guess just give me your thoughts when you heard this was happening, and were you as shocked as maybe the rest of us that, you know, we thought he was chasing that MMA path, and now he's back in Glory?
Well, exactly that. I was just as shocked. And honestly, I had to message, you know, Alan Murphy, who got, you know, who connected us together.
Yep.
And almost being like, is this like an AI generated meme or something like that? Because this doesn't seem right to me. I mean, we haven't heard from him for so long, his success in MMA, thinking he's going to go to the UFC. But to see him back to Federico, I thought, one, that's crazy, the size difference. But he's such a technician. So that's one thing. But if you think about what Glory is in our 100th show, he's almost that perfect name to bring back to show like the history that we've had in Glory, his history as being such a dominant, you know, light heavyweight champion, his fights with Alex Pereira. So I mean, I think it's almost the perfect fight based on name, but maybe not the perfect fight for Vahitov once he feels a Rico low kick or one of those big, you know, huge massive legs. If you've seen Rico's legs in person, I mean, on in video you're like, oh, even me when I was young and crazy, I'd be like, oh, I could probably do well against Rico in there. Once you see him in the size of his legs, I'm like, one of those chopping at my knees or my legs, I'm like, I don't want none of that.
100%. You know, you get a sense of how big those guys are on TV watching it, but yeah, until you stand next to him. I remember the first time I stood next to Rico, I was like, whoa, this completely changes my perspective of what I've been watching.
Yeah, oh yeah, and he's got that pretty boy look to him too, you know, nicely manicured. So you're like, he's not that big and tough. Then when you see him, you're like, wow, this is something special here. Crazy.
That is, man. Well, what a fight that has been announced for Glory 100. As I said, it's a two-day event. So that's going to be Saturday, June the 14th, yep. Rotterdam Ahoy. But it's a two-day celebration. So Friday, June the 13th, we know we've got a title fight rematch there as well with Tarek Abaves, Sergey Mazdaboyev. Interesting, yep. Right? Because it's a rematch. Tarek's the reigning champ. But the last time they fought back in 2022, it was Sergey who won. It was a split decision. So, I mean, that intrigues me, right? Like, even if you've never seen these guys fight before, just look at that history. That's a fun rematch. So what's your take on this one?
Well, I think that's a great one. I mean, if you've watched Mazdaboyev's career in Glory, he's had so many unfortunate things happen. His shin get cut open, the doctor stopping the fight, even though he still wanted to continue. So even though he was a champion, lost the belt, he honestly, in his mind, in a lot of people's mind, should have still been the champion without these unfortunate situations. Had an unfortunate situation in our light heavyweight Grand Prix tournament. But when you look at technique, size, experience, he's got everything. I mean, Kababez, though, he's the tank, his nickname, is just nonstop forward, crazy pressure. Like, and he's someone who's fought in heavyweight. So he's this small kind of fighter, like who a lot of the fans are like a Gokensaki style. He would be a perfect example. Good puncher, aggressive low kicker, fights bigger, smaller guys. So it's an intriguing matchup, but it's like a clash of styles because Mazdaboyev's that technician. But anytime the tanks fights, man, it's like you're in for one of those war style fights. And just brings that action. So I'm excited for it personally. And I think you guys should keep an eye on it because I think that would be a good fight for fans to jump on and watch and to get hooked by the sport. And another good thing, I mean, talking about news in our last event, Glory even decreased its clinching rule now. So we used to allow 3 to 5 seconds of an active clinch. Now Glory's going back to let's get out of this clinch. Let's create more action. So we're still kind of using the rule set to create more fun and more action for the fans. So
I love that.
Doing everything for us
to be even 100 events in or almost at 100, but still being willing to make those little tweaks and say, hold on, what's going to make this better? What's going to get us more attention? Yeah. What's going to help grow the sport? That's amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a big start. I mean, other breaking news we released, we're going back to Miami, which is a big news for us. We've partnered with Better, Jake Paul's betting company there. So that's a nice way to get into a new market, a new audience. Back in North America, we're sending some of our big Dutch stars over. I mean, Michael Boapea is going to be there. I mean, we have our champ fight there with Tijani versus Chico Quasi. So we're bringing the big stars over to North America. So we're hoping that kind of builds some more interest for us.
I think it's big. I think having a presence here is just going to be beneficial. Like you said, that'll be in Miami. I talked to Marshall Zelaznik a little bit about that. He was still kind of, didn't want to release too many details. I don't want to get you in trouble. But what do you know about that Better Underground? I mean, it's going to be, like a kind of a more, I guess, like a grungy type setup underground. And it's going to be VIPs in the building. What do you know about, like, what to expect out of those?
Well, just basically kind of what you know. I mean, I've been kept in the dark a lot with this kind of stuff. I mean, I'm just a commentator for the last 10 years and their former champion, but they keep me out of it. But just like you said, I mean, I heard it's going to be a smaller venue with kind of invite only. trying to get a lot of celebrities, trying to create a different type of production. And maybe that's what it needs here. I keep using that classiness of kickboxing, and our production is fantastic. Maybe the North American fans want to see a little bit of something different, you know, who knows? I mean, I just hope we kind of, the main thing Glory is going to kind of sell, it's the fight itself, our sport, yeah, the quality of its fighters, and just the athletes itself. Like, we don't have these Conor McGregors in the sport, right? We had our Badr Haris in the past, but now it's turned into like the Rico Verhoeven. So you'll see that nice, you know, big war back and forth, and then just the classiest, nicest gentleman. And it's like, it's nice to see the dynamic of how good and aggressive these guys are, and then how they are friendly after. You have to think, I mean, I know I'm rambling on here, but a guy in the UFC, John, probably has 10 fights, 15 fights. We're sending guys in kickboxing who I would say a lower level professional might have 60, 70 professional fights. I mean, so that's why when like an Adesanya, a Pereira come, they're like, I'm fighting someone 15 fights, I got 100 kickboxing fights. So I think that's where a lot of the confidence in kickboxing comes from, how often they fight.
I love it. I love seeing that. Like, if you're a fan, if you don't even know who guys are, but they walk onto the screen, you put up their record, and they're, you know, this dude's 87 and 15 or whatever. Like, I mean, come on. That's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, even when I was fighting, when I went over to Europe, we don't have that experience in North America. So when I got signed to Glory, it was my like eighth professional fight. And I fought a Turkish legend who had over 80 fights. You know what I mean? So that's kind of the discrepancy. Someone from North America has to fight over there in Europe. So they got all that experience. They fight almost every weekend. So there's a lot of confidence and a lot of experience behind these kickboxers you're watching.
I love it, man. Well, the new deal in the United States is on DAZN. So if anybody hasn't seen that news, it'll now be on DAZN. So it's worth checking out. DAZN's doing a great job in combat sports. Mm-hmm. And so this will just be another addition to the roster over there. Like you said, maybe a chance for new fans to jump on. Glory 100 coming up, the two-day fair. But Glory 99, a little sooner than that, Saturday, April the 5th, the last heavyweight standing tournament gets underway. Talk to me about how exciting you are. I love this concept. I mean, 32 heavyweights in action, right? So there's 16 heavyweight bouts. That's just phase one. This is a year-long tournament. I mean, it's incredible what this is going to be. And I love how the pairings were done with the random draw. So there's no politics. There's no, oh, I see what you did with the matchmaking here. No, it was just pulling ping pong balls out of the hopper. So talk to me about, you know, just how massive this tournament really is, and what your thoughts are on this whole, the whole concept.
So kickboxing, what made it unique, especially in the past and even in the future times, were tournaments. I mean, we don't see many one-night tournaments in MMA. Maybe there has been, or even in boxing. We don't see it. So I think that's what kickboxing had unique. We were doing a lot of four-man tournaments. We sprinkled in a few Grand Prix, which are eight-man tournaments, which have been popular in the past. In the old school days, they used to have like final 16s and stuff like that. So Glory stepped up and said, let's do something completely different, crazy, especially in 2025, to have 32 heavyweights compete in this type of structure. So I think it's massive. It's exciting. There's a lot of variables. It's a full year kind of scenario. So I would recommend watching now in April, because you'll probably find those guys that you like and you're excited with. Like me personally, I know you talked to him recently, like the signing of Rade Opacic. Like, I cannot be more excited to see Rade Opacic in Glory. I mean, that's one of the most exciting signings I feel we've gotten in a long time. So to see Opacic sign against one of our bigger, you know, fighters in Nico Pereira Horta. Like, I've seen Pereira Horta fight 3-4 times. I've only seen Opacic fight on TV. Now I get to see it live. And to see, you know, Jamal Ben Sadiq take on a light heavyweight that's stepping up in Christian Restia, massive. So, I mean, the random drawings made it fun. The idea that these guys could meet, come back in. So just for those who might be confused, we have 32 heavyweights competing in April. 16 fights, so there'll be 16 winners. Those 16 winners will then move on to four-man tournaments in one night, and that will be at Glory 100. So I'm assuming two of the four-man tournaments will be on Friday, two of the four-man, and then those winners will qualify then for our Grand Prix, which eventually they'll have to fight an eight-man tournament to be the last heavyweight standing. So a lot of confusion, but I promise you, go step by step with us. Start on April, and then from there, you're going to see how it transitions, and you're going to see something crazy where the winner, again, is going to have the last heavyweight standing and a chance to fight Rico. Rico came out and said, I think the winner of this tournament deserves to fight me, and I think if you went through 32 heavyweights, you deserve that shot.
I agree, man. That's going to be incredible. It's kind of like the final boss, right? Like, as if it's not enough to win the tournament, then you got the final boss at the end as well. So, look, I think it's exciting. I think if anybody's never watched kickboxing, what a hell of a way to start with this, right? Because, like, for instance, me, as a big MMA guy, I love the flyweight division. You know what I mean? Because there's just nonstop. Yeah, the technique is there. You know, but if somebody's never seen a fight before, you're probably better off just showing them the heavyweights. Like, you know, you see like two big dudes, you understand the power, you understand the intimidation. It's like you don't even have to know what you're watching to like it. So if you've never watched kickboxing before, I think what a place to start with this tournament where you're going to go see 16 heavyweight fights in one night on the opening night of the tournament.
Yeah, that's going to be great. I don't even know I'm going to keep my voice for that. I mean, if there's going to be knockouts, the yelling, the screaming, I'm calling these fights with Todd Grisham, who's, you know, a combat sports commentary veteran. So between him and I, we're just like two good friends just calling fights, and we'll probably, I can almost guarantee our voices will be gone.
I love it, man.
It's a guarantee.
Boy, after two nights, it's going to be really crazy. But listen, man, listen, you guys do a great job. You're doing a great job on the YouTube channel as well. People want to take it a little bit further and maybe learn a little bit more. I guess last thing I'll ask you, man, I think you've done a great job already. But, man, is there a pitch? I mean, do you have a pitch for people that are like, I've never seen Glory. I don't even know what that is. Like, what's your pitch to say, hey, here's why you need to give it a shot?
Well, my pitch would be, again, don't call me biased or anything, but it definitely is one of the most exciting combat sports you can watch. I mean, me being a longtime combat sports, even taking kickboxing out, if you watch boxing, I love combat sports. Let me tell you, to watch a 12-round boxing fight is pretty difficult. Let's be honest. You're watching. What are you watching for? Some rounds, nothing are happening. You have three rounds at 3 minutes. So to me, as I explain it, it's the 100 meters of the Olympics, right? You want to watch the most exciting thing, it's going to be that 100-meter sprint. In three rounds, you can't take a round off. You have to fight the entire time. Because of the gloves in the action, the no clinching rule, there's a lot of knockdowns. We have five judges scoring the fight. We have open scoring, so you can kind of watch and kind of see what's going on. But let me tell you, it is the 100-meter sprint. Our fighters go after it. Our scoring system is based on damage and spectacular offense. So everything we do is to entertain, and the short fight is what makes it exciting. I mean, even five-minute rounds, again, love MMA. A five-minute round, three five-minute rounds could be a long time. I mean, we want next action, you know? So, I mean, we bring action, we bring the sprint, we bring the excitement. So, Glory Kickboxing is what to watch. Hope the pitch was good. Try it. I tried to plan something out a little bit better. I tried.
can't do any better than that. Hey, brother, I appreciate it. Man, the passion, the knowledge is so evident.
Thank you, sir.
I appreciate the time. I hope everybody will give a shot at Glory Kickboxing, because, like I said, it feels like a really big time for the company. It is a really exciting sport, and I hope they'll check out your YouTube channel as well. Appreciate your time, Bazooka Joe.
Yeah. Appreciate it, John. I just want to give you one shout out, man. I just want to appreciate what you do. And let me tell you, when I got told I was going to do the interview, I was really excited because, you're always asking the first questions at the UFC, and the way you phrase your questions, the way you present them, I don't think anybody does it better than you. So you deserve your props, my brother, and keep up the great work.
Oh, thank you, man. You didn't have to say that, but I appreciate it. And we will be
honestly coming from the heart and true. Thanks, brother. Hey. Oost.
Two passionate martial arts fans, right? That's what it is.
I love it, brother. Love it.
All right. First things first. Now that we're doing more interviews, I have to remember that I basically start off every interview saying who it is, so I don't need to say who it is to set back up who it is, because I'm going to say that at the very beginning of every interview. So I apologize for having to hear that introduction essentially twice in a row there. But again,
it's okay.
His passion, man, off the chart. I really, really enjoyed that conversation. Like, I didn't even think we'd talk as long as we did, but I really enjoyed chatting with him. And, man, again, they've got some big things going on right now, and I like what he's breaking down. The Artem Vatatov thing is wild because everybody says that he turned down the USC contract. I heard he had actually signed his USC contract, that he signed the deal after the Contender Series, and then I guess an opportunity came up, and he's just like, well, I'm taking that opportunity. And I can't really blame him, although, you know, I'm sure that people that are, you know, into contract law would probably blame him a little bit, but I guess good luck trying to enforce that in Russia. They're not going to side with you, bro.
No.
I was trying to find a way somehow to
fit Glory Hole into your interview. I was like, we need to fill a gap in the show. Would you call that the glory hole?
Oh,
we had to fill the glory hole.
I have a feeling our good buddy Marshall Zelaznik is not going to want to use that terminology. I tell you what, I posted a clip of the interview I did with him on IG. And it was cool to see some old names from the past, like Donna Marcolini. So just some people that chimed in and were like, love that guy. You know what I mean? Like,
quality dude, man.
Everybody
Such
loved
a good
him.
Dude.
And I agree with what he That's says. Awesome. You know, he's like, listen, I mean, I think everybody's a fan of the stand-up game. You know what I mean? So I think if they give us a chance, they'll like it. But, yeah, it was cool to see people chiming in just being like, oh, Marshall, man, I love Marshall. He was very well-liked and very well-respected during his time with the UFC.
100%.
So. Give me the update on the picks. Where are you standing, and what are we doing in Mexico?
I caught up a little bit. I'm three behind far now. Okay. So I made up some ground in the last one. So I think I'm tied for second or third, I think like that. But, yeah, I'm only three behind her.
You went with Moreno.
I went Moreno.
I'm sure probably the stat – well, they're not out. You haven't seen it yet, right? I'm sure the stats
I haven't seen
it.
I want to say it's probably a unanimously Moreno. I think a lot of us went Torres for the Koeman.
That's a good fight.
That's a great fight. I mean, but honestly, Dober's such a dog, man.
Dog.
I would not be surprised if Dober. I literally, this is one that I could have. I know a lot of us picked Torres, and this is one where I was kind of on the fence, like thinking like if I needed one to pick back to get towards to catch up to far with that three, this would be one that was on the fence of picking was Dober. Because I think he's definitely capable of doing it. You know, I would not be surprised that if he doesn't take it. I think a lot of us, I leaned Pfeiffer. I took Pfeiffer over Gastelum.
I probably would. And listen, like I said, that's a hard one for me because, again, I'm a CFFC homer all day, every day.
Yeah.
But I love Kelvin Gastelum, man.
Doesn't?
I love Kelvin Gastelum, and he's a dog. And again, man, I do think it's going to – I mean, look, Pfeiffer hits hard. Even as much of a chin as Gastelum has, Pfeiffer hits hard.
Yep.
But I was a little worried when I heard that he's like only going down there. I think he went before Tuesday, but I don't think it was that long. I think it was like a week or 10 days. And I was like, ooh.
Yeah. You know, but honestly, you know, I think still knowing what that guy is putting his body, you know, and all these years of training, I guarantee he can come up to some sort of speed. And again, at the end of the day, it's going to be a fist punching match more than a wrestling match, I imagine. So I think it'll be okay. But yeah, I did go Pfeiffer on that.
Yep.
The next one, I think it's tough. I did pick Rosas, but I think Morales is going to be a tough shot. Did you watch the media day?
No,
it
I didn't
literally
see his.
Started.
I didn't
like
see this.
Danny, our guy Danny Scarrow was down there, and he started. He was like, "Before we get started, can we get a chihuahua for you?" I was like, "Are we really doing this?"
And then
of course, Raul was like, "Chihuahuas." And then the Full Send had their guy there, Steven, who works at the Apex a lot of times, and I can't get him to. It's like pulling teeth to get him to take part. I'm like, "Bro, ask a question." He's like, "No, I'm good." He steps up and he has a question. He's like, "Raul, just like one, I forget how he phrased it, but it was in a sense, can we get you one more time to say chiwiwi?" And I was like, that was what you asked? And so we got multiple chiwiwis. But
funny.
I leaned chiwiwi, but this is a tough match.
Chiwiwi!
And he loves that shit. Dude's kids making money off of it.
Hey, dude, I see it caught on.
Yeah.
It caught on, man. Yep. I'm telling you what, just give people anything, right?
You literally, whether he fights on the card or not, you could go through the crowd now and somebody could yell chiwiwi and they will pick up.
100%.
It's so ridiculous. So ridiculous. And then I went David Martinez against Salmon Oliveira, but I think that's a good fight too. And then I think I went Rodriguez. Oh, Rodriguez is a dog. He is a beast.
Yep.
He rounded out my pick for the main card, Ronaldo Rodriguez.
I like that one.
So, yeah,
he
I mean, I think for the most part, I think those are all favorites that I picked. I don't know if Pfeiffer is a favorite against Gastelum. I think he could be. But yeah, those are my picks for the main. But
I'll post it later tonight. But I'll tease too. I'm gonna throw a little money on C Rod as well. I'm a C Rod fan.
Dude,
CFSC Homer, but that dude's good.
That's
man.
A hell of a fight. I mean, that's a really really good fight, and that's a good opponent for it too. I mean, you know that one's gonna be a banger.
Yep.
Custa brings it.
He really does.
Yeah, it should be good. But Chires, man, Vergara, that one's gonna be fun. I think Chires. I mean, he's just. he's embraced. They brought him to the media day. I was like, why are they bringing all these dudes to fucking media day? So they brought him.
A lot of Spanish
Rodriguez
at the
media day. That's what it was. Because, yeah. I mean, they went so far down. Like, where's he at?
I get it. They want to play. Do they have Rafa Garcia there?
They had Rafa Garcia. I was trying to find where he's at. I knew he was on the prelims somewhere.
That's good, though, man. Let the nation support their own. They got to bring Loopy.
Loopy's finance.
Got to bring.
I cannot say. Because I forget who said it once. Like, where's Loopy's fine ass? And now every time I see Loopy in his Godinez, I'm just like, where's Loopy's fine ass? And she is fine as hell.
Oh, you're too
bad. But that's a hot match. Because Julia Pilastri, I remember when she came for the Contender Series, I was like, who is this beautiful woman? So that is my fight of the night for show.
Oh, that's funny. Well, mine is actually Jose Daniel Medina. No,
I mean, he's cute enough. But, I mean, I don't know. I think I'll pick Julia over him.
Sure. That's too funny. Listen, I think it's going to be a fun card.
It's a good card.
It looks like some bangers. I'm with you. I really do think people were being a little too hard on the UFC London card last week. It felt like the end of the world. I just feel like it's
ridiculous.
I know.
I mean, there was a crowd there. There was a crowd there that was drunk and having fun. Yep. Isn't that what you want?
That's what you want.
Isn't that what you want?
But this card, I think, you know, we did have a lot of decisions. This card looks like it's going to have some scraps, and we know the Mexican crowd is going to be
bonkers here. So, regardless of whatever happens in the cage, you all should be happy because it's on the road.
Do you even watch what's in the cage anymore? I just watch the crowd.
I just want a crowd to tell me that I'm enjoying what I really am watching. You know, if I get that they're enjoying it, then I must be enjoying it.
Oh, man.
You know. I imagine this crowd's going to be nuts. But, yeah, I mean, it's a good card. When I look top to bottom, I mean, there's a good fight. I mean, they're all good fights.
And then back to the Apex next week, and then pay-per-view in Miami.
That card is a little bit slimmer. But I mean, it's a home game. But yeah, when we'll talk about next week. I'll be honest, I haven't looked at the card yet.
It's a little light.
It's not the greatest.
It's
not the greatest, but it's still a home game, so I'll be happy to be there.
All I knew was Pat Sabatini was on there, so that was the only thing I was focused on. That, of course, is why Rob Hadak is making his way into town. Obviously, I'm always going to be cheering for Pat Sabatini. He's a good dude, but I haven't looked at the rest of the card yet.
I mean, you got Emmett Murphy. I mean, as your main event,
Rashard,
which is not bad.
On there.
Jansen Brito, Pat Sammartini, as you mentioned. But then you start getting, like, if you ask somebody who, you know, they might know who Cheng Ho Lee is.
Oh, against, Vanessa Demopoulos is on that card against Telly.
Well, she's
fun. That's a good one.
Davey Grant.
Oh, I saw that one. Loma Lukbumi is bad. Loma Lukbumi is like a I don't know. I really like, she's like pure Thai style.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
She's
like,
super Thai.
I really, really like her. I see what you're saying. Look. Well, we'll look into it more.
Yeah,
this week. Taurus,
I mean,
because
when you look at the Mexican card compared to this one, I think the Mexican card, I mean, maybe is top to bottom a little better rounded than this particular one, but it's still, I mean, it's still a decent card. I mean, it's got some favorites that kind of come in there, but then there's some fights you're just like, eh.
You're starting Tavares. I can't. I hate that they're fighting. I hate when people that I really like are fighting each other because one of them's got.
Yeah,
Emmett Murphy could be a good fight, man.
Kenny and Jekka.
Well, we'll talk about that one all this week. Obviously, for everybody over at patreon.com/MMAroadshow, we will get together on Monday for a little and a half episode where we'll kind of recap what we saw. Both of us will just be watching it on TV. Didn't make the trip down to Mexico City, but we'll share in the viewing experience that you guys had as well. And, of course, there's other stuff.
We might just be talking
about
the Pilastri, you know, Loopy fight, you know, the fight that matters.
We give you the stuff that really matters. We'll talk about all that next week for everybody else. We appreciate you. Thanks for listening.